Thank you. Call the Senate and House Joint Education Committee to order here. Today is Monday, April 9th, 2018. The time is 8 a.m. We have in attendance from the Senate myself, Senator Stevens, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and the others I know will be along soon, Representative Drummond.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of House Education present thus far are Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative Tiffany Zilkowski, Representative Dave Tallarico. I believe Vice Chair Representative Justin Parrish is participating remotely, and myself, Representative Harriet Drummond. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's great to see so many administrators in the room. I spent my entire high school career trying to avoid you guys, so it's good to see you at this point. Thank you for being here. So today we're going to be giving a presentation by the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We have several folks with us to speak, and we want to make sure we get through this as well as we can. So I'd ask everyone to hold their questions, and we'll have time hopefully afterwards to do that. So we've got about an hour to get through a lot of material. Dr. Parity, if you'd come forward, pleasure to have you here with us, Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Thank you for being here.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. It is indeed my pleasure to have our members present, every seat taken, and just to have the opportunity for them to share with you some of the wonderful things that are going on in public education today, as well as some of the challenges that we're facing. So thank you for this opportunity. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parity. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And today, presenting in this order will include Dina Beck, who is our ACSA President, as well as the President of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals. We also have Dr. Ashley Pearson, who's a senior researcher with REL Northwest, Education Northwest. Dr. Steve Atwater, currently the Dean of Education at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, newly named Executive Dean of the University of Alaska College of Education. Dr. Karen Gaborik, who is our Alaska Superintendents Association President and Superintendent of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Dan Carstens, who is our Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals President and Principal of Nikiski Middle and High School. Cassie Owen, who is the ALASBO President and Business Manager at Sitka School District. We'll close with Kathy Blank, our Alaska Staff Development Network Administrator, and Tammy Morris. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
And before we begin, I'd like to note that Representative Sponholz has joined us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No senators have shown up, but they will eventually. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Joint Education Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is Dina Beck. I'm here today as a president of the Alaska Council of School Administrators and as a president of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals. ACSA has repurposed its mission to focus on unity. It has been emphasized through our joint ACSA fly-ins this week, advocating for education issues at the state and federal levels, attending joint principal conferences on the national level, and working with the State Department of Education Early Development on ESSA and the Education Challenge efforts, to most recently creating the League of Alaska Education Innovators. We have collaborated to create joint position statements addressing the need for legislation to provide priority funding, early childhood education, and preparing, attracting, and retaining qualified educators. We have collaborated to create professional learning goals, such as personalized learning. We realize our administrators and educators from across Alaska, and more importantly, our children will benefit from this unified focus. When most people think of education, they immediately think of academics, the traditional reading, writing, and arithmetic. The education of our future is so much more. We are educating children. One reality we are facing today is the awareness that our children are coming to school with adversity. Currently, two-fifths of our incoming Alaskan kindergartners have experienced trauma in the categories of abuse, neglect, or household dysfunction. By the time that our students enter middle school, over 50% of them are survivors of trauma. The impact of trauma and adversity is in every classroom, in every school in Alaska. Our students often have roadblocks to achieve learning since they are stuck in the lower levels of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, psychological and safety needs. Adversity also impacts neurodevelopment, creates social and emotional and cognitive impairments, and also has a direct correlation to disease, disability, and social problems to include early death. The best inoculation we have for creating resilience is providing children with stability, consistent, caring adults. Educators can be those consistent, caring adults in our students' lives. We need to do our part to ensure every educator, teacher, counselor, administrator is provided the tools and knowledge to support Alaska's children, Alaska's future. Nationally, we have one school counselor per 482 students. Alaska does not have counselors in most schools. This hole is left to teachers and administrators who are not trained in counseling to fill this gap. Currently, the turnover rate for Alaska's principals is 26% annually. Without consistent leadership, school staffs are unable to follow through with long-term plans, and schools see increased teacher turnover. This also means students are not provided with consistent, caring adults. At the end of the day, we are unable to meet the needs of our children. Not only does the individual child suffer, but the entire generation does. If we want a future with healthy and productive adults, we need to support them now while they are children. Help them to overcome their adversity. Guide them to create positive relationships with peers. Create educational opportunities for them to learn from failure and strive for success. We need to surround them with consistent, caring adults who create a positive learning environment. Please invest in our education now. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and senators and representatives on the committee for your time this morning. For the record, my name is Dr. Ashley Pearson. I'm a senior researcher for the Regional Educational Laboratory Northwest, which is run by Education Northwest.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Steve Atwater, interim dean of the School of Education at UAF.
Good morning.
And we'll be talking with you this morning about educator retention and recruitment, landscape, and strategies. Dr. Atwater and I work together through the Alaska State Policy Research Alliance, or ASPRA. The goal of ASPRA is to produce and share high-quality evidence about Alaskan education and to support the capacity of state and local policymakers to make informed decisions for the benefit of Alaska students. The work of ASPRA is collaboratively set by a leadership team that includes representatives from the Department of Education and Early Development, the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and the University of Alaska and REL Northwest. There is a handout in your packet for more information on our work. Let's walk through some basic numbers about Alaska's educator landscape before we begin talking about educator retention. In the 2017-18 school year, Alaska had about 130,000 students, about 500 public schools, with about 8,000 teachers. We found about 700 or so of those teachers were either new to their profession or new to the state. About 400 principals in the state, with 70 new to their profession or new to Alaska. And we have 54 superintendents for the 53 districts as well as Mount Edgecombe in the state, just to lay the landscape for us. And in my next few slides, I'll be talking with you about educator retention. Wanted to make sure I provided a definition for that term. We calculate a retention rate, which tells us the percentage of teachers or principals in a given year who stayed at their school or district. We'll also be exploring some retention numbers by four rural or urban categories that we created for our work here in Alaska. And we wanted to understand retention by rural and urban school location, but the federal designations that exist for this didn't seem appropriate for Alaska. So when we dug into this work, we actually found the designations classified both Homer and Seward as rural remote, along with the Pribilofs, which we thought we might need to develop some new categories to really get at some different distinctions within this state. So we created our own four modified categories. We have urban, that includes Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. We have what we call urban-rural fringe, that includes communities such as Palmer, Seward, or Sitka. We then have rural hub, fringe, that includes rural hubs such as Bethel, as well as some other communities like Healy that are on the road system but are a bit more remote. And then the final category we created is rural remote, and all of those communities and schools are off-road. That includes places like Adak, Arctic Village, and Yakutat. So here we're seeing the school-level retention rates for principals and teachers. And this, again, is the percentage of educators who stayed at their school. So we're seeing in 2012-13, principals, indicated by the green line, the bottom line with the diamonds, principals had a retention rate of 74%. And we're fluctuating a bit over the intervening years, but end up in 2017-18 at 75% of principals retained. So that's just about where we started 6 years prior. In our current school year, we estimate then about 75% of those 400 principals in the state had stayed. This is similar for teachers, the blue line, where we start out at 79% retention in 2012-13. We shift up and down a bit, but we end at 78% of the 8,000 teachers or so in the state who stayed. So overall, what we can take away from these numbers are that the principal and teacher retention rates are relatively steady over time. However, that does not necessarily mean there's not an issue with retention in our state. So when we examine retention by rural and urban locale, we can see that the more rural schools have much lower retention rates than urban or urban fringe schools. And this is actually common across the country. So we see this pattern in nearly every state, that teachers and principals tend to move away from rural or high poverty areas towards more suburban or lower poverty schools. In urban areas in 2017-18, 88% of principals were retained, 80% of teachers. Urban fringe, we see 80% of principals retained with 84% of teachers. However, when we move then to rural hub or rural fringe schools, only 68% of principals were retained, 74% of teachers. And somewhat unsurprisingly, rural remote schools have the lowest rates. So we see 61% of principals retained, 64% of teachers retained. So that means less than two-thirds of educators are being retained in rural remote schools. So that means in those schools, more resources need to be devoted to recruiting and onboarding replacements each year than in other types of schools. We know from work that's been done in the state by the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, or CAPER, that teacher turnover is costly for districts. They estimated about $20,400 for each teacher that turns over as a conservative estimate. We also know that turnover can be detrimental to student learning. So turnover is costly for all districts, but we see that rural schools are incurring those costs much more frequently. ASPRA stakeholders also wanted to understand district retention rates. So these are the percentages of teachers and principals who stayed at their district but may have changed schools. So we expect to see, and we do see, that these rates are a few percentage points higher than the school rates because these rates allow for movement between schools within a district. We found, again, similarly to the school rates, these district retention rates are relatively steady over time. So principals start at 74% with the green line in 2012-13 and at 76% retained in 2017-18. Teachers 6 years ago had 83% retention rate, and in the current year we calculated about an 82% retention rate. So again, relatively steady. One research finding from national studies is that principal and teacher retention are linked. So stable principals result in lower teacher turnover. When a principal leaves, there's often a corresponding wave of teacher departures. Principal stability is also linked to higher student achievement. So leadership matters both for retention and for student achievement. Lastly, we looked at superintendent retention. So nearly three quarters of districts had a superintendent turnover in the last 5 years. Nationally, superintendents typically stay at a district for about 3 to 4 years. In the current school year alone, there have been 13 districts who've either changed superintendents or have a planned departure before the beginning of the next school year. That's a quarter of districts in the state. And that instability can negatively influence principal and teacher retention in their districts. We are planning to conduct future research to expand and continue updating these landscape numbers so that we can better understand the scope of this retention issue. We're working with researchers at the University of Alaska, at the Center for Alaska Education Policy Research, or CAPER, the Department for Education and Early Development, and other organizations in the state to ensure coherence in this research area, since we're all working on this issue. By next session, we hope to have more information on what school and district characteristics are associated with higher retention rates, as well as exploring and better understanding that relationship between teacher, principal, and superintendent turnover and how that instability can be linked. Thank you so much for your time. I'll now turn this over to Dr. Atwater, who will tell you more about University of Alaska strategies.
Good morning again. For the record, my name is Steve Atwater, Interim Dean of the School of Education, UAF. When President Johnson came on as president of the University of Alaska system, he recognized that the relationship between the university and K-12 was perhaps not as strong as it should be. And so he's made a concerted effort to draw the two together in a way that probably hasn't been done. I'm going to talk about a couple of the results of that activity right now and share some instances of those changes. University, of course, does not operate at the K-12 level. We're not involved with the operations of K-12, but we are very much engaged with helping the K-12 system succeed. So you probably have heard the strategic pathways term, and a result of that strategic pathways was the rethinking of how the university prepares teachers. And as such, they created a lead college, which is now called the UAS College, Alaska College of Education. That's based here in Juneau, and created a position, an executive dean position. That's the position I'll be taking over on July 1st. That college and that system will be advised by an education council, which will be comprised of University of Alaska faculty from all three locations, as well as other stakeholders involved with our university preparation programs. We will, and this is important, retain education units at UAF and UAA. The initial proposal was to eliminate those. That's not the case anymore. So we will have students at UAF, students at UAA, all pursuing education degrees, getting their certificates at each of those places. So that I want to make sure that's understood. And then with regard to one of the activities, we are making a concerted effort to help paraprofessionals become teachers, certified teachers. And so we have relationships with several school districts. We're working to help paraprofessionals get involved or getting enrolled in our system to become teachers. So what's the result of this change? One is obviously going to be an increased level of collaboration among the three education units across our system. We are very much designed to operate independently. This change brings us together to operate more cohesively. We'll be aligning processes in a way that the K-12 system will recognize as new. An example that I give on the slide is that when we place interns or student teachers in rural Alaska, there's no coordination at all. We just do it independently of one another and send our interns out to Neposkiak or wherever they're going. And as a result, the supervising university people in the past have sat next to each other in the Bethel Airport going to do the same function at two different villages close by. And so one of the examples of the easy processes that we can streamline is to eliminate that sort of redundancy or sort of duplication. And then finally, there'll be a common effort to recruit students. There's a dire need to have more teachers, more Alaska teachers, and University of Alaska will be playing a lead role with that. Some numbers for you to look at with regard to the number of grads that we have that are a percentage of the teachers in the field. You can see that we average in the high 30s in terms of the new hires. President Johnson, as you probably have heard, has set a goal of 90% of all the teachers hired each year will be UA-prepared teachers, and that is a stretch goal at this point. But when you begin to look inside of it, it's maybe not as stretch as it appears to be. And that is because we know that University of Alaska prepared teachers stay longer. Their retention rate is much higher. And so as more of the University of Alaska teachers go into the system, the number that are needed comes down. And so you have a line supply demand coming together. And so it's our goal that by 2025, that 90% will be doable. It is a stretch goal, but we're optimistic that we're going to work, that we can get close to it or even meet it. And then underneath, I have a table showing you the number of, or the percentage of UA prepared teachers, and not surprisingly, the number of principals, or the percentage of principals and percentage of superintendents is much higher than the teachers, and that's in response to teachers who are prepared out of state, coming to Alaska, and then begin to work to getting the principal's endorsement at the University of Alaska. One of the activities we're most proud of with regard to helping K-12, helping secure more people for the profession, more students for teaching, is an operation called Educators Rising. This is housed at the University of Alaska Fairbanks K-12 Outreach Office. So this is a university activity designed to help K-12 increase its number of teachers. The Ed Rising is a national organization. They have chapters all across our country. But we were one of the first states to become a state-level chapter, a state-level relationship with Educators Rising. We took the forward step of creating contracts with Educators Rising in D.C., and so at UAF, we now facilitate this activity across the system. The system can either operate through a school district or it can operate directly with a school. And you see the two slides there. In each case, we have just relationships with single schools, and others we have relationships with school districts. Quickly, the sequence of what we've done is to first recognize that this is a career pathway, and the Department of Education sponsored the development of this career pathway. We developed four courses that high school students take. These are electives that high school students take and working towards a career pathway. And as is the case with all career pathways, it culminates with a certificate. And that certificate is after passing the practice exam, which enables the students to then become paraprofessionals. So they're licensed, in a sense, to go to work. They're not licensed to become teachers because they still have additional work to do, but they do have the opportunity to go straight into a school as a paraprofessional to work. So that's a real positive change. So the chapters, we have teacher leaders. You can read each of those that organize the activities at the local level. The students participate. Very pleased that we had 75 students in Fairbanks a couple weeks ago that came together from across the state for a series of activities, as well as getting introduced to what it takes to go to college in terms of introducing them to the application process, some of the advising processes, those types of things. And we hold that activity each year. We rotate between campuses in Anchorage and Juneau. And then finally, my final point at the bottom there is that they can enroll at UA to continue their education to become a teacher, or they can go straight into work as a paraprofessional, ideally as a paraprofessional enrolling and taking courses on the side so that they will do that as well. The office, I won't read each of these bullets, as I said, is housed at K-12 Outreach Office in Fairbanks, and it is basically the command center for the Educators Rising activity. We are the coordinator. We write grants to support the activity. We are the people that put it all together to make it happen, and then we facilitate what happens on the ground at the school district level. We do offer trainings for teachers. As I said, we did write this curriculum with the support of the Department of Ed, and we feel that it's really very positive and successful. Some numbers with regard to Educators Rising statistics, you can see them there. The takeaway, of course, is that we need bigger numbers, okay? Because we have 160 high school kids involved with this, and you know and I know that probably not all of those 160 are going to become teachers. And so Alaska desperately needs to prepare 400 to 500 teachers a year. Right now we're right at about 200, 225. And so this is a way to help fill the pipeline. But it certainly can't be viewed as the only answer. There is a piece of the university's budget request to expand this operation, the Educators Rising activity, and hopefully that number a year from now will be 300. But nevertheless, it is a piece of the puzzle that we're pleased to offer and support, but it's not the solution to the puzzle. So just some strategies that I've touched on that are broader for the system as a whole. You know, of course, our challenge is how do we grow more of our own staff? There are districts in the room today and that are offering incentives. If you stay long, we're going to pay you some money. We're going to give you a little incentive to stay, so that's a way to keep people. We desperately need to make sure that the people that we bring into our system are well-received, they're trained well, they're able to hit the ground running. There will be an increased pressure on the university to offer alternative certifications, which is bringing people in without the traditional set of preparation courses. Those teachers necessarily will need more onboarding. They're not as well prepared as they would, so that'll be a challenge for us as well. And then finally, I think you're aware and you saw a curriculum bill in front of you at some point, the need to more collaboratively work together by district, and we are helping to facilitate that as well. And then I'll finish with just some basic points I wanted to make with regard to the teaching profession to make it more appealing. And this is not on the university's shoulders. This is on all of our shoulders. So I wanted to make these points. One is with regard to social esteem. We need to do more to recognize the value of teachers. The teaching profession has to be elevated to the point where we're drawing more and more students into it so that we can meet the needs of our children. The second is compensation. Alaska has a strong history of supporting education, and we have to make sure that we don't lag so far behind that people aren't drawn to the profession. And I know you're very conscious of that and very challenging with the financial times we're in. And then my last point is job satisfaction, is that the job has to be satisfying so that people stay with it. What I'm finding and what the superintendents behind me are finding, the teachers, as they reach the end of their career, are actually getting out early because they're kind of fed up with some of the compliance issues, the extra issues that are now being teachers are burdened with. And so we have to be sensitive to making sure that the job is not overly compliant, overly restrictive, so that we drive people away. And so that was my final point. So I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you,
Thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you, Dean Atwater. Congratulations on your new position. We're very pleased to have you there. Just for the record, though I ask for no questions, for the record, people need to know that this legislature and the past several legislatures have been very concerned about teacher education. I'm really pleased that Dr. Johnson is moving ahead on that. We passed a bill, as Senator Cargill remembers, I think it was Senator Betty Davis, and that was about 6 or 8 years ago, requiring an annual report from the Board of Regents. We look forward to that, and our focus is on that, and we're going to be watching this development very, very carefully. But thank you for what you're doing, and I appreciate your presentation. Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Let's move on to Karen Gabarick.
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
For the record, please.
Yes, good morning, Chairs Drummond and Stevens. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm Dr. Karen Gabarick, superintendent in Fairbanks, and I'm president of the Alaska Superintendents Association. I'd like to recognize the Commissioner of Education, Dr. Michael Johnson, who had to leave but who was here earlier this morning. So our particular organization of superintendents has done a great deal over the past few years to promote collaboration among school districts. You heard Dr. Atwater refer to that. And to facilitate conversations not only among superintendents, but also business officials, human resources departments, and curriculum and teaching and learning departments. The goals of that dialogue has been to share resources, but also to leverage people and funding so that we can more effectively manage our resources. This includes purchasing of supplies and materials and equipment, both for facilities, but also for classrooms, collaborative recruiting and hiring efforts, and you've heard the need around those. Efforts, finding efficiencies and sharing resources in administrative systems and student information systems, a lot of that behind-the-scene work that happens with districts, and then collaborating on professional development for teachers. Many superintendents have established regional groups, the interior included, that meet at least quarterly, often monthly, to have this ongoing dialogue around effective district management and effective superintendent leadership. We have also supported the commissioner in his statewide efforts with the Alaska Education Challenge. The dialogue that began with the AKED Challenge did not stop once those three commitments were developed. Alaska superintendents have held regional meetings this year with the commissioner to discuss strategies moving forward with those commitments and regarding a whole host of topics that include bandwidth and connectivity, effective distance education, implementation of the Every Student Succeeds Act, and our annual PEAKS testing that we're in the middle of right now. Many superintendents have also crosswalked our specific school district strategic plans with the Alaska Education Challenge, and we are aligning our work locally with the commissioner's leadership at the state level. Many of our local school boards have also passed resolutions in support of the AKED Challenge and are committed to providing an excellent education for every student every day in our respective communities. All this is not without challenge, however, so I want to stay on the theme of the Department of Education. The cuts to the department greatly concern superintendents. Over the course of my career, not just as a superintendent, but as a teacher and a school district school-based administrator, I've seen the decline in the capacity of DEED to support school districts. DEED has changed from a department that was proactively able to support Alaska educators to one that was doing its best to monitor compliance to one that is now really unable to even do that effectively. In my district in Fairbanks, we feel this obligation to allocate people and time to the department as much as we possibly can. We share everything that we can with the department to support their efforts across the state. The problem is that this is ultimately backwards, and it diminishes the credibility of the department. So I guess my point is downsizing government is not without cost at the local level and cost to service at the local level. The cost of continually cutting the department has led to almost the complete inability of DEED to support the educators who teach Alaska's children. So if Alaska legislators want to truly affect change in public education, which I know you do, you must support the department that is tasked with leading that change. This directly relates to another concern in our association, and that is the turnover rate in the superintendent ranks, and you saw some data regarding that. You saw that this spring we are already approaching almost a 25% turnover rate next year. In the past 4 years, that's upwards of 75% across the state. It's concerning that somebody like me, who is just finishing my fourth year as superintendent in Fairbanks, is considered an experienced superintendent in this state. unfortunately, what that speaks to is that the success in this position has become about survival, not about effective leadership. Not unlike yourselves, superintendents are continually trying to finesse leading transformative change while surviving local politics, and that's a very real issue. As you know, it is particularly difficult in times of diminishing state and local revenues. So inconsistency in district leadership certainly impacts the stability of the entire organization, but what really has a negative impact is the turnover of teachers in our districts. And again, you saw that data. And I think remembering that that data at a localized level in some cases is much more extreme than what you saw there. Due to a number of factors, and you heard some of that, I would include, you know, the current economic uncertainty, the state of our public retirement system, the geographic challenges with living in Alaska, the high cost of living. It's difficult to recruit and retain teachers. Whenever I gather with my superintendent colleagues, like this week in Juneau, it stuns me to hear some of the stories that they're telling about a 50% or higher turnover rate in their teaching ranks. It is impossible to meet the needs of kids when that is occurring. And the districts with that level of turnover, they're the least of all the districts able to deal with that effectively year after year. So I encourage legislators to use every mechanism available to you to stabilize the education environment in our state. As superintendents, we greatly appreciate your attention to full education funding and securing that early. Thank you very much for that work. We also appreciate the movement that we see with the Retire Rehire bill, which will give us another tool to address teacher vacancies that we are unable to fill during the regular hiring process. We appreciate your attention to bandwidth and those needs in rural Alaska. And then I'd like to call your attention to our joint position statements, which are in your packet. These are created by all the associations within the umbrella of ACSA and represent our collective priorities. And so thank you for your work here in Juneau. Thank you for your support of educators and children, both in your home communities and across the state. And thank you for your commitment to Alaska during these tough times. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Dr. Gavorek. Dan Carstens, great to see a local boy grow up and do great things. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me, Mr. Chairman and members of the Joint Education Committee. For the record, my name is Dan Carstens, president of our Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals and proud principal of Nikiski Middle Senior High School down on the Kenai. Before I begin, I just want to share a little bit about myself, which I think will speak to what I'm kind of my message here today. I've been married for 23 years, five children, three graduates of our public school system, three of them through my school. Got two more in my school, a freshman and a junior, very active in pretty much everything that that we do in our public schools. Bottom line is I don't only make my living and support my family in the public school system. I'm a product of it, and I believe in it wholeheartedly. I've been in my current building for 13 years. First 6 years as the assistant principal, and the last seven, and next year will be my eighth because, yes, I already have my contract for next year, which is nice. So 13 years total, and I personally live out the fact that principal stability is linked to, first off, student achievement, and secondly, less teacher turnover. There's been much said about student achievement and the cost of educating a student here in Alaska. One issue that hinders student achievement in our state, no matter how much money we set aside for education, is the fact that we have a 26% turnover for principals in Alaska. That means one out of every four of me is gone next year, which does break my heart. I don't like seeing that. And the further we get away from our more urban or rural fringe new kind of categories, the higher that gets. And that consistency piece, when we have a consistent vision from the leadership to the teachers and through the students, it is extremely important to have that. There could be many reasons for it, for the turnover, but the fact of the matter is that it is an extremely difficult position, extremely difficult job with many complex mandates and requirements. There are a few things that would promote more consistency in our profession, and I don't want to just bring a problem to you. I want to bring part of a solution as well. We're taking it upon ourselves, working with our elementary school colleagues, to have a unified vision and voice to support new principals as they begin their careers in Alaska. We want to set up a mentorship-type program where our associations are supporting our new principals, whether they're new to rural, urban, the bush communities, no matter where they are, we want to be able to support them from practicing principals. It's a very large time commitment. However, we believe in each other that much to where we can make that commitment to that time. Secondly, a long-term fiscal plan. That would be ideal to be able to offer contracts in a timely manner to teachers. In this time of having a teacher shortage would lead to more consistency for each school. I was lucky enough to offer contracts this last month, in April, for my non-tenured staff, which was nice. Last year it wasn't until May, and so this a little bit earlier this year is very nice. It's very nice to have that consistency. Additionally, to assist in the shortage of teachers, the retire/rehire bill would give school leaders another option as they move forward with difficult to fill positions. Special education is always difficult to fill. I have two positions in my building that I need to work on today after I'm done here to make sure I get those filled. Bottom line, I'm not here to ask for money, only to adequately fund education. More than anything else, we simply need to know what sort of funding we will have. Last year, I was still hiring people in July, about 2 weeks before my new contract started. I was working all the way through the summer, trying to make sure that we had people in place for those kids. And, basically, not able to hire until late. We have to shift around schedules. I ended up having to call teachers in the middle of their summer to say, hey, you're going to be teaching this now because I have to hire this person here, and this is where it's going to be. And so they have to spend the last part of their summer making sure that they're prepared for the kids coming in as well. It takes a long time for those teachers to make sure that they have those dynamic lessons for our students. Also, I don't have my personnel intact on contract to work through these scheduling issues. And so as they begin in early to mid-August, we're recreating a schedule that should have been done back in April. So that's what that early funding does. If we have that, we're prepared and we're ready, and we can make those dynamic lessons even better for when those students come. This is just one case. My case is just one. I'm sure there's plenty more. A lot of my colleagues have told me very similar stories. But to bring it back together, I do believe my colleagues in the elementary schools will join with us at the secondary level to create a system of support to our new principals. With your help in adequately funding education in a timely manner, we can have the premier education system in the entire nation, because we will not lose people. People will want to stay, our teachers, our administrators, our superintendents, everybody, right on down the line. Paraprofessionals, our families will want to stay with us. To put it simply, it takes all of us with a unified vision and voice to raise and educate a child. Let's work together to have an excellent education for every child in every school. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchins. Ms. Ullman.
Good morning. My name is Cassie Ullman. I'm the president of the Alaska Association of School Business Officials, also known as ALASBO. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am also the business manager for the Sitka School District. ALASBO is a professional association of school business management officials. The best way to explain our organization is that we are the K-12 staff who deal with the dollars in the school district. Our current membership includes over 175 members throughout Alaska school districts, and our membership consists of chief financial officers, business managers, human resource directors, superintendents, food service directors, maintenance directors, accountants, and many more other positions. Our mission statement is to promote the highest standards of school business practices, and our vision is educating stakeholders in the effective use of resources for the benefit of Alaska's children. I'd like to highlight a few of our recent projects. First, we coordinated the state chart of accounts review in cooperation with the Department of Education School Finance Division. An updated chart of accounts will enable school districts to report their financial results with better consistency. The updates also ensure compliance with federal mandates, and the recommendations were submitted to the Commissioner of Education in December, and they were approved by the State Board of Education in their March meeting. Another highlight of the year is a committee that came together to work on standard operating procedure manual to be used as a template by school districts. The manual will be especially helpful to smaller districts around the state, and it is currently being reviewed by our partner organizations and will be reviewed by the ELASVO board later this month. ELASVO provides numerous opportunities for ongoing training and support for members. Our annual conference provides a unique opportunity for members from across the state to meet for professional growth and sharing of ideas and concerns. Our 2018 December annual conference will be our 46th annual conference in Anchorage with the theme, We're All in This Together. We hold power lunches monthly, which are teleconferences that discuss topics of interest to our membership. And some examples of our recent power lunches include chart of accounts revisions, E-rate, impact aid, and the Alaska Education Challenge. We have a summer leadership conference where ELASVO members and our board of directors come together to shape the annual December conference and discuss ELASVO strategy and organization issues. And our national association, the Association of School Business Officials International, known as ASBO, has a certification for school business officials called the Administrator of School Finance and Operations, or an SFO. ELASVO supports this program with an annual study group and financial support for test fees. And we currently have 11 SFOs within the state, which comprise a far higher percentage of our members than any other state affiliate of ASBO International. ELASVO also offers grants for members to attend trainings, such as our annual conference, summer leadership, and the National Conference for School Business Officials. And like other organizations represented by ACSA, we have felt the crunch of the state's fiscal crisis, which has led to a higher turnover and more difficulty filling school business positions around the state. As in other education professions, districts are less able to offer competitive wage and benefit packages, and we are competing nationally for qualified professionals in these important positions. At the same time, the budget crunch results in a very high stress level for our members as they work with their superintendents, boards, and other top district leaders to make the most of every dollar available. And for years, we have been advocating for a fiscal plan which will decrease the uncertainty in the K-12 funding cycle, and we will continue this with this advocacy. We also advocate strongly for a non-fiscal action that legislatures can take to reduce costs. This includes workers' compensation reform and efforts to rein in the high cost of health care in Alaska. In conclusion, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to share some information about ELASVO, because K-12 school business officials are so spread out across the state. ELASVO has become a very important organization for me and for many of our members, both personally and professionally. We are proud of the way we work together to support each other and to enhance the efficiency and professionalism of our school district. And I'd like to thank you all for your concern and work on K-12 education issues. And please feel free to call on ELASVO members whenever our analysis can be helpful to your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ullman. Kathy Blank, is Tammy Morris with you? Okay, here we are. Here's Tammy. Oh, thanks, both of you. Sort of presenting together this portion. Thank you. If you identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Blank. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm the administrator for the Alaska Staff Development Network. We're a statewide nonprofit organization housed under the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and we wanted to take a couple of minutes to share some information on the Alaska Professional Learning Network, which is a project we've been working on over the last 2 years to support professional learning for teachers in our state.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tammy Morris. I have been an Alaskan educator for 32 years at the classroom level, district leadership level, statewide professional development, and also as a school at the state system of support school improvement coaching. I am really excited to be able to share some information on the Alaska Professional Learning Network. I have been using ACLIN for the last couple of years to provide professional learning for Alaska educators in ways that I haven't been able to before. ACLIN is a statewide partnership between Alaska Staff Development Network, the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development using the Teaching Channel. ACLIN supports Alaska educators by being the online space to support professional learning and growth for educators all over the state of Alaska. Membership in ACLIN is for all Alaskan educators at no cost to them through ASDN and the Alaska Council of School Administrators with support of Title IIA federal funds from the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. We know that the feeling of isolation is one of the reasons that Alaska educators leave their teaching and leading positions. ACLIN reduces the feeling of isolation because it helps build connections and increases collaboration in professional learning among teachers and leaders throughout the state. So what can educators do on the ACLIN website? We can watch award-winning videos of effective teaching practices. We have an existing database of approximately 1,300 videos of pre-K to 12th grade classrooms. We have the capability to upload videos of Alaskan teachers teaching in their classrooms and also sharing classroom artifacts to support the teaching of Alaska State Learning Standards. Teachers can build their cache of techniques related to curriculum, instruction, and assessment by learning ideas for lessons, viewing new teaching strategies to try out, or take an online class. We can also connect with other teachers across Alaska by creating or joining teams or participating in online classes. This is important in our state because so many of our teachers are isolated. For example, in many sites, there's only one secondary math teacher. So having a way for secondary math teachers to connect with other secondary math teachers is critical to supporting them. This increases both teacher retention and their effectiveness. Teams also allow teachers, administrators, and coaches to share resources and reflect together on instructional practices. Alaskan educators can also gain access to professional learning from anywhere. They can choose a focus for learning and collaboration on a particular content area, strategy, or a problem of practice. Teachers get just what they need, just when they need it. ACLIN is an example of modern, personalized professional learning. ACLIN provides opportunities for in-depth study of the Alaska Math and English Language Arts Standards, as well as instructional strategies through learning pathways. We have pathways for ELA and math at both the elementary and secondary level. Each pathway, for example, one would be ELA Foundational Skills, has learning plans that provide a step-by-step process for groups to learn, to try out, and to get feedback on instructional strategies to meet the state academic standards. These learning plans are homegrown. They are designed specifically for Alaska educators by content specialists. Currently, we have more than 50 learning plans available on ACLIN, and more are being built based on the needs of districts and schools. ASDN offers classes based on the pathways that are designed to exemplify research-based, effective teacher professional development. They are content-focused, promote online collaboration, show models of effective practice, include support and dialogue with experts, and incorporate feedback and reflection. We're in our second year, and during these 2 years, ACLIN has made steady growth in the number of members, the number of visits to the ACLIN site, the number of posts and comments by members, the number of teams created for learning by communication, collaboration, and sharing resources. More than 1,200 ACLIN members represent 42 of our 54 Alaska school districts, and more than 500 teachers and administrators have used ACLIN to earn credit for recertification. A couple of months ago, we received a comment from an educator in a rural school district that exemplifies our growing network for professional learning. He said, "At the 2017 RTI conference, you gave a mini-lesson introduction to the Alaska Professional Learning Network and the Teaching Channel during the Ed Camp. After that conference, I used ACLIN for the conference credit course. Since then, that has led to me participating in a couple of ASDN's webinar courses that utilized ACLIN. Just as ACLIN made reflecting on the conference more meaningful, it also made the webinars much more engaging than just participating in the webinar itself. I've also used ACLIN to view multiple teaching videos as part of my personal professional development. I think that ACLIN will become an invaluable tool in implementing professional learning communities as time goes on. I think that ACLIN is and will continue to become a great tool for Alaska educators, and I look forward to continuing to use it in multiple capacities. Thank you for all you do to help provide this wonderful resource to Alaska educators for their professional learning."
Thank you, Ms. Morris. Ms. Blank?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate enormous amount of information. Thank you very much. From everyone, you've done just a great job, and I appreciate even more the senators and representatives at the table who have not asked questions. It's very hard, one of the hardest things to do. Now we'll have a few minutes for questions. Before we start, just the question of the entire group, how many of you have had your own children in your schools? Could you raise your hands? Thank you very much. My appreciation, sympathy goes out to your children. They must be tough. Well, thank you all. So questions from Senator Begich.
No surprise I might have a question or two, I think. I just have two very quick ones. I think the first question just, I think Dr. Gaborik had to leave, but my question, you know, part of the Moore lawsuit relied upon this idea that Deed would provide support. She made some very specific comments about Deed not only not providing that level of support, but being more of a compliance entity, and now even to the point of not being a compliance entity. And so what I wanted to get from Dr. Gaborik or perhaps from somebody else would be what aspects of Deed should be reinforced to improve support to superintendents, because we're really at that point now. And I would point out that between the House and the Senate, virtually no support was cut to the districts in the budget process, but it sounds like we're looking at a new level here. And so what does need to be added to Deed? And then second question, just whomever wants to answer this, is the Senate has proposed flat funding for this year and for next year from the Senate Finance Committee. And I'm just curious whether that's supported by superintendents or what impact that might have if we did flat funding for 2 years straight. So those are my two questions, and I hope somebody might be able to answer those questions.
Okay, somebody to think about who can answer that. And Madam Chair, you had a question to add on to that?
Yes, I do. In relation to Senator Begich's comment just now, I can tell you that in the 6 years that I've been in this position, the department has gone from roughly 400 employees to under 300. So without knowing what those employees exactly did, I can tell you right there there's been more than a 25% cut in capability at the department. And just as a general comment, as a former school board member, I know I recognize many of you from my many years, and it's the same. We hear the same thing every year. Not that I don't want to hear it. What happens is the characters change and you have to re-educate us, and I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the reinforcement. I wish that this the House at least had truly forward-funded education by voting the right way on the funding source, but that's a political problem that we are going to be working on here, and I tell you we're working on it very intensively right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So back to Senator Begich's question about the department. Is anyone prepared to talk about that? Yes, please.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Monica Goyetta. I'm the superintendent in MATSU. And I want to speak to your flat funding question. That's one I feel like I'm the most prepared for. But in terms of Deed, it's a great question. I would really hope that Commissioner Johnson would weigh in on that. But what I've noticed just over time is that they used to have more people that were able. They were experts in curriculum instruction and assessment. And you could call as a resource, and they'd be able to help you develop your own plans, either as a principal and as an executive director of district office, assistant superintendent, and that now that single people are stretched so thin that they really are just responding to the compliance work of the day. So. But I would really that answer doesn't do it justice. So in terms of flat funding, in our district for MATSU, to give you an idea, our budget is about $250 million. And the cost of doing business from 1 year to the next, with increases in steps and salaries and health care increase. We just recently got our increase released, and our health insurance, depending on your plan, is going to go up between 8 and 11%. That's our second largest cost driver, health insurance. And so we spend about $40 million a year on it. So for us, it's a $7 million deficit just doing business next year compared to this year. So flat funding really means that we, again, will have to increase our pupil-to-teacher ratio. So we'll be looking in high school at 33 students to one next year. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I probably did not mention that Senator Coggle has been with us from nearly the beginning. Thank you for being with us, Senator. And Senator Begich, you had a second question. Did we?
She did, in fact, address both of them. And I would just point out, Senator Stevens, that or Mr. Chairman, that you know, the Moore lawsuit was based on, and the performance audits that have been done of the department reinforce this, that if the department isn't meeting its constitutional obligation, we have an obligation to fund the department. And I, what I'm hearing is that it's not happening. And then secondarily, a $7 million cut is what essentially a flat funding leads to, is what I think I just heard.
That's
is that correct?
Correct.
All right. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Zuchowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my question is for Dr. Atwater. Thank you for your presentation this morning. You had mentioned the university's desire to prepare teachers that are from Alaska to teach in Alaska, and I was just looking over your presentation again. Does the university have a sense of how many Alaska secondary students want to go into teaching? I know you touched a little bit on it with the Educators Rising Initiative, as well as what the needs are versus how many students are participating in that particular initiative and what those trends might be. And looking at the university's goal for graduates as percent of new hires, I think might answer some of that. But is there a sense between the Department of Education and the university's pipeline, I guess you could say, to get graduates into education? Do you have a sense of what those trends are and whether they're stable over time and what the contributing factors might be of why students might decide to go into education or step out of the field?
Yeah, for the record, Steve Atwater, the information that you're asking for, I do not have. I know that districts do a survey of their students each year to determine activity, and it may be that we can compile that information at the district level. So I don't have that. I'll try and get that for you, though. With regard to overall interest, I think the Educators Rising that I've summarized is increasing that interest. It's making the field more attractive, giving students sort of a cleaner gateway into the profession, so to speak. So I'm encouraged by that. However, I don't have the overall number. And as you know, from my experience, most graduates are determined to do things that will get them jobs that'll pay well. I know that on the Kenai, most of our graduates were very interested in going off and doing jobs that would bring them an income that would allow them to have and raise a family. Teacher profession often isn't viewed that way, and so I think that's a challenge when we begin to look at 17-year-olds and 16-year-olds in terms of what they want to do. So, and that's what why I raised that slide in terms of raising the social esteem of being a teacher, is that the profession has to be recognized as noble enough and important enough that some of the factors that are limiting can be pushed aside to help bring people into the profession. But I don't have the numbers at the high school level in terms of what is that interest, other than based on our enrollment across the system, it's relatively low. And I can, from personal experience, when I attend career fairs for high school students, my table is not visited very often. And the tables that are visited most often are the engineers and the school of management and the business official. Those types of careers and degrees are the ones that students are drawn to in a way that they're not drawn to education. So it's a collective effort on all of us to try and change that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Atwater. While we have you here, the issue of the organization is called Educators Rising. What do you need from us to help that be successful?
I need an awareness is a key thing for you to know that this is happening, and encouragement as you can to help people understand that this is an activity that helps steer high school kids into the profession. And it's inside the university budget. The university, part of its ask of you is, or through the president, is to include funds for this. And so just to be aware that the university at this point is not putting hard dollars toward Educators Rising. It's soft money that we've secured through grants. Actually, I take that back, because the TVET money that you authorize, a piece of that is going to Educators Rising. So I take that back. But the majority of our fiscal money is coming from soft money. So this budget that request that President Johnson has made of the legislature does include money for Educators Rising. And so by default, you would be supporting it in that way.
Thank you very much. A question, Senator Hughes, on while we're on this issue, while we have Dr. Atwater here.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Atwater. You mentioned 400 or 500 teachers are needed per year. You have 160 students I believe in Education Rising. Do you have a goal to, and like you said, students may change their mind, decide not to become teachers, so I'm just wondering if you have a goal to, say, target 800 students or 900 students by a certain year, and if that's part of the solution.
Thank you.
Yeah, part of
it seems like it might be.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, part of the strategy is to not only look at high school students who are the traditional go to college, become teachers, but also to look outside of the traditional mode. People who have graduated, they have a degree, they decided after 5 or 6 years in their job that, it's not really what I want to do, to bring them back for an intensive year, get them certified and out. And so it won't only include recruiting students from high school, but also students from the community at large as well. And so if you targeted only high school students, getting to that 500 number is going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult no matter what you do. But we will be making a casting our net, so to speak, more broadly than just the high school.
Thank you. And Mr. Senator. Chair, I want to make a comment that's totally unrelated to this, but it's part of the discussion, and that is the rising health care costs and how that's impacting the district. I know the Cordova School District mentioned 18% of their budget's going to health care. We just heard from Matt Sue, 8 to 11% increase. It's $40 million. I'm guessing that's like another $4 million, so now up to $44 million. So I believe, as legislators, this is just my comment, that over the next few years, an emphasis in this state with the administration should be on lowering health care costs in our state, because it is really impacting dollars that should be going into the classroom. And, some of that $7 million, if we could get that into the out of health care and into the classroom, it's what we need to do, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Thank you, Dr. Atwater.
Thank you.
We have Representative Parrish online. Thank you for being with us, Representative. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. First, a question for Dr. Atwater. Dr. Atwater, you mentioned paraeducator support is one of the ways of growing your own staff and leadership. Can you go into a little bit of detail about what that would look like?
Yes, the University of Alaska at all three of its locations has relationships with school districts where we're supporting paraeducators to become enrolled in our teacher preparation programs and work towards becoming a teacher that way. The best example that we can offer is what's occurring at the Lower Kuskokwim District, which I think got some press about a year ago, and you may have seen that, and that's where the district is actually investing hard dollars into the preparation of its paraprofessionals to become teachers. And they've gone as far as to allow them, when the teachers reach their senior year, or when these paraprofessionals reach their senior year, which is the internship or student teaching, where they're actually paying them a salary as if they were still working while they go to school. And so with the idea that those paraprofessionals will be endorsed to teach the following year and will come right back and teach. And so that's the best example. Lower Kuskokwim, as you know, is a large district and has resources to do that. Not all districts would have those resources. But we work very closely with school districts, the Bering Strait, St. Mary's, Kuspok, Southwest Region, to help the paraprofessionals begin that trail. The downside of the paraprofessional route is that it's often very long. As a full-time person working, to complete the necessary 120 credits to get your bachelor's degree to become a teacher, it takes years. If you're only taking one or two classes a semester because you have a family, you're home, you're working full-time, it's a lengthy process. And so that's the limitation of that. And so while this is a route, it's one of the solutions, it will not funnel hundreds and hundreds of teachers into the profession. You know, if we get 20, 30, 40 a year, that would be great, but it's not going to be the big numbers. So it's just a piece of the puzzle.
Thank you, Dr. Atwater. Representative Parrish?
Yeah, a couple more questions, if I may.
Certainly, go ahead.
Thank you. On the teacher retention issue, one of the things that's been highlighted is compensation. I'd be very interested in knowing as well what the if there's a differential in average career length or likelihood of turnover in any given year between the people on the Tier 1 and 2 TERS program and TERS Tier 3, the defined contribution level.
Is that for me?
If you're comfortable, please, Steve.
I mean, all of my peers or the superintendents in the room are probably better versed since they're more current with that. I can offer my perspective, but I didn't want to steal their thunder if they...
Anyone care to address that issue? I think you're it.
Perhaps Dr. Pearson?
Yes, please come up.
For the record, this is Ashley Pearson with Education Northwest. Through our data work, some of which we've presented here today, we actually have not investigated that issue, but I agree that it is an important question. And for that, in terms of the differential in the average career length, in terms of the tiers, the way that the data are currently connected, it's my understanding that the data on staffing and retention is not directly connected at the state level to the tiers. At least in the data we have been provided by the department. So at this time, I'm unable to provide those numbers, and I'd like to turn that to Dr. Atwater if he has another response.
Thanks again. As you know, the Tier 1 teachers have been eligible to retire for a long time. Most of them are heading out. Tier 2 became eligible to retire in 2005. 1990 was the first year of Tier 2. And so the Tier 2s are now at a point, the beginning ones, they're eligible to go, not necessarily that they will. Tier 3s, there's a lot of anecdotes about Tier 3s. I've not seen hard data on Tier 3s. There's an assumption that the Tier 3s are going to walk after 5 years when they're eligible to take their money, but I don't believe there's a consistent response to that. I am pursuing a study of this, and perhaps we'll come to you next year to help partially support this. But we do have a education economist at ICER who's interested in taking this on and looking at it, because in passing there's often been an assumption that the Tier 3s are just walking immediately. I think what we can pull away from the difference in retirement systems is that once upon a time, Alaska's retirement system was very attractive. It was a draw to bring teachers to this state, and certainly the Tier 3 doesn't hold that level of allure that the other tiers did. And so I think it's fair to say that that's the case, and I know that, and the superintendents behind me know that recruiting teachers from out of state, which is what we depend on, unfortunately, is harder all the time, and so I think that's a piece of that.
Thank you. Well, we have you here, Dr. Pearson. I think one of the most revealing slides was the one about how leadership matters and the tracking of the retention of principals and teachers. That's a very interesting subject, and I'd like to hear more about that. But are you seeing is that a national trend as well?
Thank you, Senator Stevens. For the national trend for that, we do see that Alaska follows national trends in that sense. We're seeing across the board, we have that link between principal stability and teacher stability. That is nationwide. We are seeing that Alaska tends to follow those trends.
Thank you. I'm sure we all suspected that, but it's nice to see the documentation. Yes, Representative, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could just talk about that for a little bit. I stopped being a school board member in 2003, but I've never stopped being completely immersed in this. In Anchorage, we used to say that a principal had about 7 or 8 years in a school maximum. And I've seen in my own elementary school in my neighborhood where my children went, we had a principal, Marcus Wilson, you guys know. I'm sure you know Marcus. He stayed at North Star well beyond the 7 or 8 years. As soon as he left, there was almost 100% turnover of teachers in that school. But how can you, and Marcus is still in the district, of course, but how can one expect permanence in that kind of position? What can we do to encourage people to stay as long as possible beyond the average tenure? And how can we keep districts from moving successful principals around so that their leadership skills and impacts stay with that school and improve retention and everything all the way down the line, including and especially the stability for students, which is what we're all about.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I appreciate your question. In terms of ways that we could mitigate the negative impacts of turnover, I think that there's a lot to be said for ensuring that institutional knowledge can be kept through onboarding processes.
I think providing additional stability with perhaps planned turnover, if mm-hmm. possible, if someone knows there's a departure, perhaps having a bit more of an overlap with positions, those types of strategies may help. I do think there will always be turnover. There will always be people who retire, people who leave for other reasons. But I think there are actions that could be taken that could mitigate some of those negative impacts. And I'd like to invite, if there's anyone else who'd like to speak on that issue, since I know that all of you in the room are much more familiar with ways to mitigate that turnover.
It must be a tough problem. I totally get it. But I would appreciate it to see that made part of the philosophy here going forward, because we know how much it impacts children, and we'll start right there. We want these kids, and going right back to the beginning of the presentation, where I believe Dina said two-fifths of kindergartners enter school with two or more ACEs. That right there tells us that we owe those kids a stable, a successful platform from which to launch their lives. So thank you. Representative Parrish, do you still have questions online?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, yeah, please go ahead.
I'm looking, I admit I'm cheating a little bit. I'm looking at the educatorsrisingalaska.org website and the application connected with it. I see that there is a academy in Fairbanks and a conference in, it looks like in Anchorage. What are you doing for communities that are not on the rail belt to encourage their participation?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Parrish, those are just locations for the events. The students who participate in those events are from all over the state, and we have funds to help support the travel. Districts are supporting the travel, but we had kids from North Slope, kids from Northwest Arctic, so those are just locations of where the event took place, not which students were represented there.
Did you have any kids from Southeast?
We do. We have a very strong presence from Ketchikan, and I believe we had some from Sitka as well. I'd have to check on that, but I certainly Ketchikan is a leader with Educators Rising, and so we're very, very proud of them.
Follow up?
Go ahead, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. What exactly is being done through the Lead Education Campus in connection with Educators Rising?
I'm sorry, which campus? I missed the first part of that question.
Representative Parrish, can you repeat the question?
Yes, what's happening through the Lead Education Campus?
Southeast. Right. Okay, yeah, that is not formally in place. It's just been a change that it goes into effect on July 1st. And so my position as the executive dean of that will be to help grow and coordinate the education preparation programs across our system, as well as to lead UAS with regard to that. But that will formally commence in July.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Parrish and Dean Atwater. Any further questions from the committee? All right. Thank you all so much for committing this time this morning. We really appreciate the presentation. And as I said earlier, same story, new characters. Significant improvement. I like the increase in statistics on retention. But as you say, we have to do better. And I'm really interested to compare to how we are nationally. And I just wanted to say one thing. I thought it kind of odd that Palmer was considered a rural fringe school. I think Senator Hughes might wonder about that. I suppose it has to do with perhaps where some of the students come from to go to school in the Palmer area. Let's see. The senators are free to go. The next House Education committee meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, which was scheduled for Wednesday, April 11th, is canceled. And with no further business before us, we are adjourned at 9:15. Thank you.